This is VOA News. I'm Joe Ramsey. Trucks carrying badly needed aid for the Gaza Strip have rolled across a newly built U.S. pier and into the besieged enclave for the first time. Friday's shipment is the first in an operation American military officials anticipate could scale up to 150 truckloads a day. It comes as Israeli restrictions on border crossings and heavy fighting hindered the delivery of food and other supplies 7 months into the Israel-Gaza war. The Republican-led U.S. House of Representatives passed a bill that would force President Joe Biden to send weapons to Israel on Thursday. Reuters correspondent Ryan Chang has details.
The move is seen as a rebuke to Biden for delaying bomb shipments as he urges Israel to do more to protect civilians during its war with Hamas. The House approved the Israel Security Assistance Support Act largely along party lines. Some 16 Democrats joined most Republicans voting yes. Republicans accused Biden of turning his back on Israel after facing widespread pro-Palestinian protests. The act is not expected to become law, but its passage underscored the deep U.S. election year divide over Israel policy.
Reuters correspondent Ryan Chang. Hamas is a U.S.-designated terrorist group. The International Red Cross has set up a field hospital in southern Gaza to try to meet what it described as overwhelming demand for health services since Israel's military operation on Rafah began last week.
With the current situation of the Gaza Strip, we believe that this field hospital will contribute to the general healthcare delivery services in the Gaza Strip now that the majority of the health facilities are not functioning.
This is VOA News. Ukraine attacked a power substation in Russian-occupied Crimea and an oil depot and railway station in a Russian Black Sea port town overnight, a Kyiv intelligence source told Reuters. Kyiv has stepped up strikes on energy facilities deep inside Russian territory, which they say are legitimate military targets supporting Moscow's 27-month-old war in Ukraine. Attacks have led to disruptions in refining capacity. Friday's strikes were a joint operation conducted by the Security Service of Ukraine and its military intelligence agency, the source added. The suspect in the shooting of Slovak Prime Minister Robert Fico was escorted to his home by police on Friday. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma explains.
Slovak media reported on Friday it was part of a search for evidence. Fico, who's 59, was shot multiple times on Wednesday as he was greeting supporters after a government meeting. Officials at first reported doctors were fighting for his life, but after a five-hour operation described his situation as serious but stable. Markiza, a Slovak television broadcaster, has shown footage of the suspect being taken to his home in the town of Levice and said police had seized a computer and some documents. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
French police shot dead an armed man who set fire to a synagogue in the northwestern city of Rouen early on Friday. Reuters correspondent Rachel Graham has more.
French police shot dead an armed man who set fire to a synagogue in the northwestern city of Rouen early on Friday. Officers opened fire when the assailant threw an iron bar at them and threatened them with a knife as he left the building. The synagogue had smoke billowing from it, a Rouen city official said. The fire has since been brought under control. The synagogue's rabbi, Shmuel Lubecki, said he was left in great shock after the attempted arson attack, adding that his wife was present at the time. The synagogue suffered extensive damage, including to its furniture, but no one was harmed, said the city's mayor.
Reuters correspondent Rachel Graham. North Korea has fired suspected short-range ballistic missiles off its east coast a day after South Korea and the U.S. flew powerful fighter jets in a drill that the North view as a major security threat. South Korea's Joint Chiefs of Staff says the launches were made from the North's east coast on Friday afternoon. Japan's chief cabinet secretary said a North Korean missile landed outside Japan's exclusive economic zone. South Korea's Joint Chiefs of Staff statement called the launches a clear provocation that threatens peace on the Korean Peninsula. Find more online at voanews.com. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhibi in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
He appealed to both generals to put the interests of the people first, to resume peace negotiations, to ensure that people have access to adequate humanitarian assistance, to not block humanitarian assistance, to ensure that their troops and their allied forces fully respect international humanitarian law and human rights law.
That was Ravina Shamdasina, the Human Rights High Commissioner's spokeswoman. Details coming up. Also, Senegal's Prime Minister questions France's continuing military presence. And Ethiopia protests the U.S. ambassador's critical speech. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. The United Nations Human Rights Chief Volker Turk has held separate telephone calls with Sudan's rival generals this week to try to de-escalate the conflict in the country. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The Human Rights High Commissioner's spokeswoman says Volker Turk has been trying to have a conversation with the warring generals since August. Ravina Shamdasani says he finally succeeded in holding separate telephone calls with each of them Tuesday to express his deep distress over the situation in Sudan.
He appealed to both generals to put the interests of the people first, to resume peace negotiations, to ensure that people have access to adequate humanitarian assistance, to not block humanitarian assistance, to ensure that their troops and their allied forces fully respect international humanitarian law and human rights law.
She said Turk is particularly concerned about rising violence around the city of El Fasher in the Darfur region, where hundreds of thousands of people have taken refuge. Shamdasani says Sudanese Armed Forces Commander Lieutenant General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan and the commander of the paramilitary rapid support forces, General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, each acknowledged the importance of respecting international humanitarian law. She says Burhan also indicated he would facilitate visas for more UN human rights staff. Right now, she notes, her office only has one international staff member in Port Sudan.
The visa issue is an important one. The High Commissioner did ask for his designated expert to get access to Sudan, as well as for more of our staff to get access. And that was a positive outcome of the call that we facilitated. So that is positive. As you know, it's very important for us to be on the ground, to be able to cover such important crises more closely.
Shamdasani says High Commissioner Turk asked the generals to take specific concrete steps to protect civilians, to bring this conflict to an end, and to prevent it from escalating further. As of January 21st, the United Nations estimated at least 13,000 to 15,000 people had been killed and 33,000 others were injured in Sudan's war. As of March 21st, over 6.5 million were internally displaced and more than 2 million others had fled the country as refugees. Millions are facing critical levels of food insecurity. Also today, the United Nations said it has received only about 12% of the $2.7 billion it has sought to aid Sudanese civilians. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Reputed to be coltan, capital of the world, the mining town of Rubaya in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo has fallen into the hands of rebels. The fall of Rubaya is causing a stir among local residents who fear M23 rebels will use profits from the coltan mines to fund their war against the DRC government. Zanem Netizaidi has the details.
Estimated to hold more than 70% of the planet's coltan reserves, the town of Rubaya has been under the control of the M23 rebels since April 30th. According to Mapenzi Mulume, a young man from Masisi territory, the rebels have set up teams to exploit the minerals 24 hours a day, and women and children are also invited to join. He laments.
Depuis que les rebelles du M23 ont occupé la cité minière, ils sont en train d'exploiter.
He says that since the M23 rebels occupied the mining town of Rubaya, they've been mining 24 hours a day. He noted that children are working in rotating shifts. He said he deplores child labor and calls on the international community to intervene on behalf of the people of Rubaya. The M23 rebels have been fighting the DRC government since 2021 following a nearly-year conflict that ended with a government victory. People in Masisi territory fear the rise in power of the rebels and their allies in the Rwandan army. Exuse Kavatawa, a local resident, believes the rebels have achieved one of their primary objectives with the conquest of the important coltan reserve.
Rubaya, c'est un gisement vraiment riche à coltan en plusieurs matières.
He says that Rubaya is a really rich deposit of coltan and other raw materials, and so the fall of Rubaya is a salvation for the M23. He says the access to Rubaya will enable the rebels to find the means to finish their war. In a communique issued by the Ministry of Mines, the Congolese government asserted that since the occupation of Rubaya by the M23, tons of raw materials from the Democratic Republic of Congo have been crossing the Rwandan border on a daily basis via the Nyiragongo territory occupied by the M23. Rwanda has not commented on the issue. These assertions are rejected by the rebels, whose military spokesman is Major Willy Ngoma. He confirms that mining continues in the mines, but he asserts it is by local indigenous populations.
Notre lutte, notre combat n'est pas pour les minéraux. Aucune autorité, tant civile que militaire.
He says the struggle of the government is not about minerals, and asserts that none of the authorities can get involved in this mineral trafficking business. When a citizen is in his own backyard, he says, digging, finding something and selling it, it has nothing to do with the authorities. The population can sell because they are free in their country, and we only assure their security. The M23 rebels have extended their zone of control beyond the town of Rubaya in recent weeks, where the minerals of cassiterite and manganese are also mined in considerable quantities. Zane Mnitizaidi, VOA News, Goma, Democratic Republic of Congo.
Senegal's Prime Minister Ousmane Sonko has questioned the military presence of former colonial ruler France, which has several bases in the West African nation, saying it impinged in Dakar's sovereignty. Sonko, speaking to Dakar University students yesterday, said cooperation must take into account Senegal's sovereignty in both the monetary and security fields. According to the French news agency AFP, he said, "We must ask ourselves the reasons why the French army still has many military bases in our country and their impact on our sovereignty and our strategic autonomy." You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. While visiting a recently restored historical building in capital Addis Ababa in Ethiopia on Wednesday, the U.S. ambassador, Irvin Masinga, called for a transparent transitional justice process to address reports of extrajudicial killings, arbitrary detentions, sexual violence, and other abuses in the country. Ethiopia's Ministry of Foreign Affairs denounced the speech by saying the statement is ill-advised and contains uninformed assertions. It said it is contrary to the historic and friendly relations between Ethiopia and the United States. So, to brief us on the situation, we have reporter Maya Masekur from Addis Ababa live. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Maya.
Thank you so much, Aya.
So, what is the latest from where you are, Maya?
So, as you earlier mentioned, the ambassador's speech is causing quite a stir here, just in terms of, like, a lot of social media discourse, as well as you earlier mentioned, the response from the Egyptian government, which did not seem very pleased with the statement.
So there were rumors of demonstrations in front of the Ethiopian American embassy in Addis Ababa. Is there anything you can tell us about that?
As of now, there is no confirmed demonstrations happening at the U.S. embassy here. I was able to also speak to people that were inside the embassy, that working inside the embassy, and they have also said that there are no such protests or demonstrations have taken place.
So was the American ambassador's speech expected? Did it come out of nowhere? He was visiting a recently restored historical building in the capital, Addis Ababa, when he actually made his point on the Ethiopian government's position on the extrajudicial killings, arbitrary detentions, sexual violence, and other abuses. Did it come out of left field for the Ethiopian government?
The ambassador's policy speech on human rights and dialogue on Wednesday, I think, could have been prompted by, you know, a number of things. Overall, there's been a series of human rights reports, the assessment of human rights in Ethiopia, and these reports are coming from the national rights body, the Ethiopian Human Rights Commission, over the past few months and years, implicating all conflicting sides, including the government, in what were mentioned on Wednesday in the ambassador's speech, which were, like you earlier mentioned, civilians being impacted, extrajudicial killings, enforced disappearances, as well as conflict-related sexual violence. A more recent cause could possibly also be the death of Ethiopian opposition political figure, or rather the assassination of the opposition political figure, Bate Urgesa, who was the spokesperson of the Oromo Liberation Front. He was imprisoned in March, and then following that, he was found assassinated, and his body was found in Oromia, in Ethiopia's Oromia region. Now, at the time, the Ethiopian Human Rights Commission, as well as the U.S. And other international bodies, had called for an impartial investigation into his death. However, last week, the Ethiopian Human Rights Commission, who had been investigating this and collecting testimony, was informed, basically, that they had been forced to quit the investigation into his killing. So when this happened, the U.S. Embassy had again called for an unimpeded investigation to take place, because the commission had said that there were police forces who were moving around the city, kind of tailing the expert investigators, detaining the family members of people who had given testimonies, and so on. So I think that could have been a much more immediate reason. One final thing that I might want to mention here is that there has been recent fighting in some areas in Tigray. The first of its kind since the peace deal was signed in November 2022, and this is in the region's southern part. So these are what's called, or what are referred to as, contested areas, because they are now under Amhara forces, whereas previously they were under Tigray regional administration. And so, you know, recent clashes have now escalated and resulted in 50,000 newly displaced people. And again, this was mentioned in the ambassador's speech on Wednesday, where he spoke about newly displaced people and conflict. I think these two things could be mentioned.
And lastly, and briefly, Maya, the ambassador Masinga blamed all armed actors for inflicting human suffering in the country, and he mentioned the Oromo Liberation Front. He also mentioned the Fano Self Defense Militia and the Tigray People's Liberation Front. Any word from these fronts or organizations?
Well, sir, the response has been from the Egyptian government side, who, you know, was not at all pleased that the U.S. ambassador had mentioned these groups, which the Egyptian government says that had been blackmailing, kidnapping, and sort of terrorizing civilians. I will say, though, that, you know, the statement did end that, you know, despite them opposing what the ambassador had said, that they will work on correcting any errors, any inconsistencies, and that the Egyptian government was committed to a mutually respectful bilateral dialogue.
Maya Misikara, reporter in Addis Ababa. Thank you for your input.
Thank you so much.
U.S. voters have several ways to cast their ballots in a presidential election, including by mail. Many Democrats have embraced mail-in voting, and now Republicans are being urged by party leaders, including former President Donald Trump, to use all voting options in the 2024 general election. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias has the details.
Enthusiasm about the November general election in the United States is average among voters, according to a recent Gallup poll. But it's a right that some people told VOA Spanish should not be taken for granted. Duke University student Pilar Kelly.
Voting is kind of the most fundamental way of making your voice heard.
Republican voter Jenny Wilson said people must vote for things that will help the country. Americans can vote in person on Election Day or early at special polling locations. They can also send their ballots via the U.S. Postal Service. Will Adler is with the Bipartisan Policy Center. He was interviewed via Skype.
Every state in the country allows some form of mail-in voting. The way that they differ is in how much they require an excuse, such as the voter being away from their home or their polling place on Election Day.
Where states offer vote-by-mail programs instead of absentee ones, registered voters receive their ballots automatically before Election Day. Social distancing measures at the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic boosted mail-in voting. More Democrats than Republicans embraced it during the 2020 and 2022 election cycles, according to Pew Research surveys. The messaging by President Joe Biden on the matter has been consistent throughout the years.
Voting by mail is a safe and convenient way to get more people to vote.
Biden's predecessor, Donald Trump, who is again running for president, has repeatedly expressed concern that voting by mail could lead to fraud.
Absentee is good. Mail-in universal is very, very bad. There's no way they're going to get it accurately.
Since 2023, however, several Republican politicians have stressed the need for the electorate to use all forms of voting. Trump has also shown an openness to it. On May 9th, he stressed on his Truth Social platform that, quote, absentee voting, early voting, and election day voting are all good options. Groups trying to mobilize Republican voters say they want to chip away at the voting-by-mail advantage Democrats have established. Max Doxey, political director for the Republican State Leadership Committee via Skype.
The more voters that we can bring to the table in early voting and absentee voting in vote-by-mail through our efforts, the better position we'll be going into election night.
The Democratic Legislative Campaign Committee told VOA in a statement it doubts the Republican voters will be persuaded to shift their views. The committee also warned about legislation being considered by state Republicans to block mail-in ballots with minor errors and ban ballot drop boxes. Experts say it isn't easy to predict how voting by mail could impact this year's election result. Michael McDonald, professor of political science at the University of Florida, via Skype.
If you make mail balloting easier, then you do see higher turnout. It's not clear if there's a strong effect on the partisan outcomes, but because, again, even Republicans will want to vote and they'll find ways of voting.
McDonald expressed confidence that the safeguards that election officials have in place will reduce the already historically small chances of fraudulent votes being cast in a presidential election. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
The government of South Sudan and rebel opposition groups have signed a commitment declaration for peace, described as a key step in efforts to end the conflict that has long crippled the country's economy. The French news agency AFP says the content of the agreement signed yesterday during high-level mediation talks in Kenya was not made public. The rebel opposition groups were not part of the 2018 agreement that ended South Sudan's five-year civil war, which left 400,000 people dead and millions displaced. Kenya's foreign office said the agreement was a first milestone in the talks in which warring sides pledged their commitment to end the violence and hostilities. South Sudan is due to hold elections in December, but remains politically fragile, in part because
the 2018 peace agreement is yet to be fully implemented. And now, time for sports. I have in studio with me our VOA sports analyst, Mokbilia Baro, and is here to get us up to date on European football trending topics as well as the NBA playoffs. Welcome to African News Tonight, Mokbil.
Thanks for having me, Hayes.
So first, what is going on with the title race for the English Premier League, Mokbil?
Yes, at the top of the league at the moment is Manchester City. This is our intern Omolemo's favorite team. Unfortunately, my side, Arsenal, we are trailing by 2 points. There is only one game left in the season. So the final result of the season this year will come down to games that will be played on Sunday. Manchester City will be playing West Ham. West Ham is a London derby for Arsenal. So maybe the London team can help out the London team. So if Man City loses to West Ham, then Arsenal can then jump them and they'll be able to win the league because Arsenal will then have 89 points if they're able to win their game against Everton. So a couple of different, you know, possibilities. If there's a draw situation where if West Ham and Man City actually end up drawing and Arsenal still wins their game, both teams will have 89 points. But depending on the goal differential, one team will win. So at the moment, Arsenal has one goal differential above Man City. So if a draw happens, that should take Arsenal to the next level. So it'll be very, very exciting to see what happens. This has been one of the more, I would say, action-packed end title races, if you remember. The likes of our usual producer, Dave Vandy, and his team, Liverpool, were in contention for a large part of the season. But unfortunately, now they've kind of jumped off of it. So, yeah, Sunday, 11 a.m. Eastern.
So Liverpool has fizzled.
They have fizzled out. And interestingly enough, we will get into them right after this.
Okay, one of the most successful managers in the EPL, Jurgen Klopp, will be leaving Liverpool. What does that mean for the team?
Absolutely. As we were just talking about Liverpool right now, this, I think to me personally, I feel as though the him mentioning to his players in the middle of the season that he was leaving kind of put a level of pressure on them that maybe they weren't expecting because, you know, they're coming off of a really difficult season last year where they had a lot of injuries and didn't really play up to expectations. This year, for a large portion of the English Premier League, they were at the very top, you know, so obviously injuries and stuff occur, but I think that in and of itself, with knowing that he's been with them for almost a decade now, very successful with that team, so many accomplishments, so many trophies, the team is going to definitely miss his leadership. And it's going to be very interesting to see how they perform next year after losing such a legendary coach.
Coaches make a difference, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
And finally, Mokbil, the NBA playoffs, they've been amazing. What teams do you think could win it all?
Absolutely, Yeheyes. To me, the most exciting series has come from the Western Conference. Minnesota Timberwolves versus the Denver Nuggets. Minnesota went up 2-0 against the defending champions. The defending champions responded like champions do by coming back out 2-2, then taking a commanding lead 3-2. And at home, Minnesota potentially could have lost yesterday, but they beat the Nuggets by 45 points, Yeheyes.
Wow.
You know, so game 7 happening on Sunday, that is a very, very exciting game. And no, I'm not supporting Minnesota just because it has the biggest Somali population. Yeah. I do have some cousins there. But we will see. But yeah, that's the team that I'm looking forward to. I'm trying to see the Timberwolves and the Nuggets.
And I guess this is a good time to wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I am Yeheyes Wahib in Washington. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. With our sports analyst, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Tien Wong, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.